Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. On this week's episode, it is Marcus talking to Marcus, which I'm not sure I've ever said or done before. I'm going to try and not get too fanboy and giddy-like as I talk to a man who has designed a couple of my favourite MLS kits. It is Marcus Dilley. Marcus, nice to speak to you today.
Nice to speak to you. Thanks for having me.
So Marcus, can you introduce the audience to you, who you are and what you do?
Yeah, my name is Marcus Dilley. I founded my own graphic design and apparel design based studio here in St. Albans. I used to work for Adidas Football for just over 2 years.
Oh, brilliant. And can you tell us, how do you become a kit designer? As someone that's a bit of a fanboy myself, how do you actually get to do it for a living?
Well, my journey is a bit backward. I wouldn't recommend anyone really follows the journey that I've done. I started by, you know, the kind of traditional way, having graphic design background, studied at a school at GCSE. At A-level, went more down the product design route, then went into uni and studied a whole host of things that kind of didn't really scratch my itch for design. I studied architecture, mechanical engineering with automotive design, product design again, and nothing really happened. I actually left university without a degree. So lots of debt, okay. Not a lot of good stuff academically there. But one good thing that came out of being at university, I actually played American football. And that's kind of the path that I went to get into the industry. So after university, I played for a team in London called the London Blitz. And a couple of their guys founded their own company called Player Layer, who you might know from the Forest Green kits. So yeah, he's a good friend of mine. And started there about the start of 2013, I think. 2014, okay, yeah. Maybe. As an intern, basically, to start with, and then worked my way up over the course of 18 months to the head of design of that company. Before that, I was just doing bits here and there, American football-based, freelancing for a company in Finland called Alpha. Not really knowing what I was doing. And then, when I was at Player Layer, I was always thinking how could I learn the ways of the industry, best practices and stuff like that. So it was always on my agenda to go to one of the big three, whether it be Nike, Adidas or Under Armour. And back just before I'd actually started at Player Layer, I applied for a job at Under Armour. And it fell through because of immigration, unfortunately. But okay. I think once they showed a bit of interest, it showed me that I was actually quite good at this. And prior to even doing any of this stuff, and I was doing more traditional like print and social media type graphics, although the social media graphic kind of way it is now was not the case back then in 2012 or whatever. But these are the kind of graphics that I was doing, and I never really put two and two together that you could do kits and design together. Yeah. I was just thinking cyber branding or that's it really. But they kind of fell into it and kind of got to where I am now.
Okay. And in terms of a design brief, could you talk us through how a uniform or a kit design brief, or as in terms of a design challenge, how it varies or is maybe similar to any other type of design brief that you may receive? You've worked on all types of design challenges yourself. So what is unique about a kit design?
When you're working for a brand, I think the main challenge is you've got to try and tell the brand story as well as the club story. Normally, if you're getting commissioned for a piece of artwork or whatever, it's from one client and that's it. You do what they kind of ask you, you put your own flair on it and there you go. But, you know, when I was working at Adidas, there's always a horizontal graphic kind of story that we want to put into it. You know, if we go back to 2018, we had the variation of line thickness that created different shades and stuff like that. If you look at the stuff that they're doing at Adidas now, there's like more brush strokes and hand painted type styles and stuff like that. So these have all got to try and be incorporated, as well as trying to tell the club story. But then even within that, you get different service levels. So, you know, you get the top teams, the top international teams who get totally bespoke stuff. You get teams that are on the next level down where you can try and put a bit more customization in, but a lot of it's about productivity. And then you get some teams that are just team wear badge ups, which don't even come across the desk of the global team.
Okay. And in terms of a process and how it works, so consider me to be a layman who knows nothing about how kit designs happen. So would I be right in thinking typically are you working like a year in advance?
Normally two, actually.
Oh, okay, right.
So for the 2018-19 season, I designed in about September of 2016 for that stuff. So it's about a year from start to finish in terms of the design process, including sampling and stuff. But then there's a year for production and all the go-to-market stuff, like the marketing campaigns and stuff, to be created as well. So it takes about a year, but the design phase actually starts about 2 years ahead, which is quite difficult because, you're looking at trend stuff and stuff like that. And you're obviously so far away from the launch that you never know what's going to really happen in 2 years. You can rely on, you know, different trend forecasters and going to you know, fashion shows and stuff like this. But at the end of the day, it's how everyone interprets that high end, you know, catwalk fashion stuff. Is it going to be, you know, what do people take out of that and then put into the high street and then put into sportswear and stuff like that? You know, it's difficult.
Okay, got you. Before we go any further, can you let people know where they can find you online so they can be looking at some of the kits that I'm soon going to go deep into with you?
Yeah, so my website is dilly.studio. I'm also on Twitter at mdill38, which is more like a peek behind the curtain of the industry. But I do have at Dilly Studio on all the major ones as well, so you can find me there.
Great, fantastic. And when it comes to designing a kit, do brands typically get either thought starters or a brief from the club? So if, say, we're considering the top tier clubs who get more of the bespoke looks themselves, what's the very first step in the process? Do you typically receive a brief, or would it be more the brands who would start the ball rolling?
I mean, internally, we have our own kickoff, which is the horizontal stories that we want to try and incorporate. But then in terms of first, you know, touch point with the club, it would be a brief. So that's normally done with the product marketing person, along with the merchandiser or whoever they assign to look at kits. So it's normally a collaboration between a brand and the team together. But obviously the team have their own inputs and their own things that they want to get across as well. So yeah, it's normally the club coming to with a brief and saying, you know, it could be an anniversary, it could be, you know, some trend stuff that they've seen that they want to, you know, take advantage of, stuff like that.
And in terms of a home, away and a third kit, do you identify either of them as specific opportunities to do something new? I remember growing up and having in my mind that the away kit was often either so if the home kit was a darker kit, the away kit would be, you know, it actually had a functional use that when the home kit clashes with your opposition's kit, you had the away kit, and then the third could just be something different. Do you identify each of the three kits as specific opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, with the top teams, you're normally talking about people that will be playing in UEFA competition, and their regulations are notoriously quite stringent on that stuff. So,
okay.
If if you have, you know, a dark based home kit, then one, either the away or the third has to be light so that they can play. You know, striped teams are obviously quite difficult to plan for that. Say if you've got, you know, Juventus, you have a black and white home. If they do a black third, you know, you have to do a different colour than white. Otherwise, all your colours are black and white, and who can play against who in that situation if they play Newcastle, for example, away. So these are all things that you have to take into account.
Sorry, just jumping in on Juventus. Can I ask your opinion on last season's half and half kit, the move away from the traditional pure stripes to the half and half with the pink thin kind of disruptor down the middle? What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I mean, the story that I believe that they told was that when the team is standing next to each other, then as a whole they make stripes, which is, you know, in terms of story like that, but. And unless you get it out there enough, people are just going to see it for what it is. And that's a key thing in design in general is, we want to put stories into stuff because it makes things mean more to people who know the stories. But there's going to be, you know, 75% of people whose first interaction with it is not knowing that story and seeing a half-half and saying, whoa, that's really different to what they've had in the past. And I think that's kind of the thing that's happened with Juventus since the rebrand. They've wanted to disrupt things a bit more. You know, the rebrand itself completely blew everything previously out of the water in terms of football crest. So they kind of said that they wanted to be more of a brand, and it can be, you know, across different industries and stuff like that. So, you know, having this more progressive outlook for a team that's been really traditional and has stripes, which I think is the hardest kit to design anyway, is, you know, if you keep doing the same stripes and just varying thickness or putting a graphic inside a stripe, at the end of the day, it's still stripes. And if you're a brand and you're looking to sell these, how are you going to make people buy them when essentially they look the same from 20 yards away or whatever? So that's the kind of difficulty. But the half-half in general, I'm not, you know, I don't really think it's a massive departure. I think, yes, you know, it's not the traditional stripes that they've had, but I think sometimes you need to step away from that to be able to go back to it and have a bit more impact, you know, when they finally go super traditional. I mean, the one they've got now is a bit more traditional stripes, but with brush strokes. But, you know, even that's a bit more of an impactful thing going back to the traditional stripes.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we could talk about the buy-in kits that you worked on for the 18-19 season specifically. So there's buy-in themselves have recently transitioned from the pure stripes to more of a heavy kind of red influence on the kits and a move away from that. How do you think Bayern have approached that themselves and having worked on those kits as you did?
From my experience, they're a very traditional club. They essentially would be happy, I believe, with just a plain red kit every year, especially on the home. With the away and third, they're more than happy to experiment. But the home, and, you know, the one I did is probably going to be the last one with any blue on it, because they signed a thing with the fans saying that they're just going to have red and white as the main colours on the home kit now. But, you know, I don't see them as a team that's, you know, going to mess with a home kit anytime soon, especially with the fan feedback that they've had with that. So,
can you give us a wee bit of insight to that? Because I didn't know about the move away from the touches of blue. Is there a specific reason for?
I think traditionally they, you know, way back when they were always red and white, and this is the way that the fans have grown to love it. You know, back in my first experiences of them, then in the early 90s and late 90s, they had, you know, navy and even like a royal blue in there, which I quite enjoyed, and that's why I wanted to put some navy in there. They'd had a I think it was a 2014 kit. They went back to blue and red stripes for the first time in about 15 years, so I was like, well, we haven't used navy on any of the stuff recently, let's try and work that in there. So we did a bit on the cuffs and the shorts, and I think that was I mean I liked it with the look in general, but I think the fans were saying this is too much of a departure off the back of the 2014 one than we really want on the home. So, you know, that's at the end of the day, the clubs should listen to the fans, I believe. And that's a big thing that you want to have as feedback as a designer. So, you know, them signing this thing or agreeing this thing with the fans to only go red and white is a good thing if that's truly what they want. But it does make the challenge of designing each home kit very, very much more difficult without being able to use, you know, variants in colour.
Well, and it's an interesting point you raise, because I wanted to ask you that as a kit designer, and I'm talking this as a man that's blind and never been involved in the process, but am I wrong in considering that you've almost got three very separate stakeholders? Might not be the exact right word, but you have the fans who obviously have a huge importance and relevance with the kit. And then you've got the clubs themselves that you're designing the kit for, and they obviously want to sell kits as naturally in the commercial world. But then you've got the brand that you're working for, which again are wanting to create not only just beautifully looking kits, but commercially and financially viable kits as well. So you've almost got three separate, very important stakeholders that you're producing
a kit for. Yeah, that's totally right. The fans and club, in my mind, are kind of linked, because, you know, the club should be doing stuff that the fans want to buy in general. You know, that's the key to them selling kits, is that the fans like it, or, you know, some people who are kit enthusiasts could buy it. But I think the main bulk of sales would come from fans of the club. So, yeah, and yeah, you're right in saying that, you know, there's these stakeholders that all you've got to try and balance. And that's kind of the nuances that you have to go through as a designer of kits. You know, with the home, I think you've got to go exactly really what the club want, because that's, you know, the main one. That's if you mess with that, then you're kind of going to get some people that are really vocal about, you know, the change and stuff. But on the way in third, that's where I believe you should be able to experiment. And, you know, thirds in general, you can see with the history of Nike doing it and Adidas as well, is these horizontal directions that go across all the teams that they have, where there's, you know, this year's Nike ones are all done by Air Maxes and different colorways that they've done in. So, you know, these are more, especially the third kits, where the brand can tell their stories along with pre-match jerseys.
And talking about third kits, I think we both have we shared appreciation of Norwich City's third kit this year.
Yeah.
It's a club that have done super exciting things this year with kits, from the Phil Galloway produced promotional content for the kits that are fantastic, and then what Area have done with the third kit. Can you, as a man with your expert eye, could you give us a wee critique of the Norwich third kit?
Yeah. I think it's really good. I don't think I could necessarily pull it off if I was going to wear it, but I think, you know, for what it is, again, third kit, you can go crazy, you can mix it up a bit. They did it with the away kit a couple of years ago, where they, you know, went back to, they had a white version of the, I think it's 92 home kit, as you know, when they won the old Division One. But this one is obviously just completely different, and, you know, completely breaks the mold of anything I've seen them do recently, where it's, you know, got bits of pink and stuff like that in there. And the one bit I pointed out is the sponsor. So, yes, you know, a lot of sponsored would insist on maximum visibility on that, and maybe a box on there, especially because there's bits of white in the graphic, and the sponsor is white, but they've done a good job of making that fit in. And I just think it's a good kit and a good, you know, place to experiment. And they've done a good job of, you know, getting eyes on it and, you know, having it as a promotional tool as well.
And the white out club badge as well does show you, in my eyes, that the visual assets of the club badge and the sponsor, and also the manufacturer's logo on the kit, they can all come together to create that kind of perfect synergy. And I think that's a really interesting example, especially working on such a busy kind of background on the fabric itself. I think all comes together really well. You're a man that's, you've done a lot of work in designing kits for the MLS and for the American market. Can you talk us through how designing kits for the MLS is different than any other league? Because they MLS teams have the same manufacturer or brand that's designing the kits, which instantly is a different approach in my mind. Can you talk us through how designing kits for the MLS is different from anywhere else?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that's the main difference, is that you're designing, you know, 20, I don't know how many there are, maybe 26 teams all at once, rather than just, you know, a handful of teams. And that becomes more of a, you know, productivity type thing rather than, you know, 100%, you know, diving into to the design process. And I think, you know, there's a balance there that needs to be struck, where, you know, you could spend, you know, weeks and weeks on one team, but, you know, you've got 13 other, or, you know, 10 other people, 10 other teams that you've got a design for as well. So timelines are very tight with that. One main thing that I learned from traveling out there and my history with American sports is the use of team color. So in the traditional American sports, American football, baseball, basketball, there's a lot of just rotation of team color. So if you're, team is black with red and white, like DC United, normally your away kit will be white with red and black. So, you know, these are just rotated round. Whereas, you know, in the European market and even in South America, you can vary up the away kit to be any colour you really want it to be, as long as it probably doesn't show, you know, your rival's colours really. And that's probably the only real thing that gets in the way of that. But yeah, these things are, you know, just starting to get a bit more common in MLS, where they vary the colours a little bit. But, you know, from my experience of MLS, it's not really the same as the global football way, and it's not really the same as the traditional American sports over there. So that's why it's, you know, such a you know, unique thing to handle.
Well, and talking of unique things, can you talk us through your recent partnership announced with Columbus Crew?
For sure. So I'm really excited about this. It's, you know, been a while in the making. It started back in the summer, well, in January, I think it was, of 2019. I flew over and spoke at the league meetings in Chicago, where I was talking about my experience as an Adidas designer and, you know, how I take briefs and how the teams themselves can, you know, produce these briefs that help the designers, basically. And it got me thinking after that if the league are asking me to come in and do it, why can't I, you know, go and talk to some teams and see if I can, you know, help them directly with their interactions with Adidas and the league in terms of how they create all of their briefs for Adidas to make their kits. So over the course of the next year or so, I had conversations with teams who helped me basically create this process. So I don't think there's anything like it out there at the moment, which is, you know, exciting to be pioneering in that space, where basically I help the club, you know, long-term plan, you know, how are we going to look over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years or whatever in terms of the macro level, and then go into each individual year. We've just done the first year now of their brief to Adidas. All the design is still 100% done by Adidas, but I kind of help the club get into a place where, to, you know, the brief that they create is exactly what an Adidas designer needs to be able to get the most out of it. So I give them all the information so that, you know, there's no other real way to interpret what we want other than to look like what we end up getting, really. And that's, you know, it's all about maximizing that opportunity, because, again, if you're going back to sitting on the other side of the table, there's a lot of, you know, importance on the time you spend on this stuff. So if you can give a designer the tools that's needed to create a great design, you know, in a time that's shorter than if you have to have lots of back and forth, then I think that's a bonus. And, you know, luckily, Columbus Crew have agreed with me on that and they've seen the benefit in it.
Brilliant, fantastic. And the kit for the MLS All-Star Game in 2018 that I know you designed yourself. In my eyes, that's kind of peak example of a look running right from shirt to short to socks. Everything fits and works so well. Even the color palette, the red, blue, and white color palette for the MLS All-Star Game. In my eyes, it's just peak. Everything is fitting and coming together for it. Can you give us a wee insight to that as a project?
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of started with Mike Walker, who's actually now at the league office. He was my marketing counterpart at Adidas, you know, when we did the MLS stuff, and he came to me basically wanting to do a really good, you know, version of a national team kit, basically, because, you know, there'll be the MLS All-Stars against Juventus, I think it was at the time.
Okay.
And I don't think we knew who that was going to be, but it's normally, the All-Stars against another team. So we wanted to do that. And we just had the previous version, which was done by my colleague Sergio, which was the version of the kind of denim kit that the US team had.
Yes.
And they did, he created a new graphic on a navy base that even incorporated some maple leaves in there for the Canadian teams. So we knew we wanted to mix it up from that year. So we wanted to go back to having a light base for a kit. 2016, I believe, they had a white one with a sash. So we wanted to, you know, create something a little bit different there. So we went to this off-white color and then used, you know, if you look at the 2018 season, there was a lot of kind of throwbacks to iconic graphics that were used by Adidas. So we had the Germany one that was based on the 90. We had Colombia that used it, Mexico, Spain, you know, all of these ones used, you know, yeah, iconic Adidas graphics. So we wanted to use another one that was utilizing the sleeves. So we did that and then, you know, created this red and blue version and then put that onto the shorts. And then with the socks, we went for a bit more of a traditional American sports type stripe, where it's kind of thick in the middle and then two thinner ones on the outside, just to kind of, because this is a place where we can essentially, MLS in general is a place where designers can go a bit crazy because they don't have the same amount of rules as you know, UEFA and FIFA do in terms of, you know, sign-offs. And the reason why they've got the big three stripes on their shoulder this year is because, you know, they're allowed to do that, whereas in Europe, okay, you're not allowed to do that. So
really, that's interesting. I myself wouldn't have thought, didn't know that there were such rules from governing bodies that affects kits designed themselves. So that is interesting to know. And just going back to the 2018 MLS All-Star kit, even the target sponsor logo just fits so perfectly in itself. Was that driven by yourself to use the logo that didn't have the type and the name Target on there and just have the icon?
It wasn't actually. You know, this logo, although I was a bit naive to it at the time, is just, you know, instantly recognizable in the market. So I think they're Minnesota based, and Minnesota United used them as well, just with the target on there. And if everyone sees that in America, they instantly know what it is. So there's no need. And that's the strength of their brand, where they don't have to have the word on there at all. They just need to have the target, and everyone knows what it is. In terms of the color palette of it, we wanted, you know, Target's color is red. So it was important that if we were going to be doing it on a whitish base, they would probably want it in their brand color. So, you know, using that and then trying to incorporate that into, you know, the rest of it with, you know, the corporate logo, the Adidas logo, and then the name and numbering on the back as well. We just wanted to, because we knew there's always a back and forth with some teams where, you know, a sponsor might not be signed, whereas we knew in this case, this is exactly what the sponsor is going to be. So we can then design the fact that we have that, you know, that mark to incorporate. You know, one that I did design that didn't have the logo on was LAFC. So their inaugural kits, at the time, I didn't know that they were going to sign with YouTube TV. So, you know, that was created blank. So,
well, it's, this is going to seem like these podcasts are planned and everything is coming up organically. Jumping onto the LAFC kit, so a great responsibility in developing the look for a new club in the MLS, and one that's instantly going to have a high profile being based in LA. Can you talk us through how do you approach such a fresh, brand new look in itself? And also, I did want to pick you up on sponsors and how much, when you are developing the look of a kit, how much you consider the sponsors' logo and how they are going to fit in with the look, or if you do at all, and whether you even ever know what the sponsor is going to be.
Well, in terms of sponsors, if it's a signed deal that you're designing for, you know, 2 years ahead, and they know that they're going to have that sponsor and they've got a long-term one in, you would 100% incorporate it into the design, because it's such a big thing. I was actually speaking to some American friends of mine who have just started, you know, seeing on their NBA kits and stuff like this, you know, sponsor logos, which has never really been a thing, and it's tiny and it's on the sleeve or on the shoulder, sorry. And, you know, I'm okay with it because I've seen football kits with massive sponsors on for years, whereas they see it from our point, they see it from their point of view as, you know, they don't, you know, it's secondary to the team branding, and that's kind of backwards in their mind. But, you know, if it's there, you've got to try and incorporate it. You know, if it's, you know, an out there colour, say if, for example, going back to that Norwich one, they wanted to do it in that pink, for example, you could propose it. But, you know, a lot of the time, a white or a black sponsor is normally in a sponsor's guidelines, which you can use. Whereas if you're using any other colour apart from their brand colour, then you might have a bit of an issue. So knowing that up front and, you know, having these conversations with the sponsors and the teams and, you know, the federations, whoever are going to be using it, it's important to know what you can and can't do with that stuff. And then, yeah, going into the LAFC stuff is actually a really good process that we had with them. You know, as a new team, it is a completely different challenge. You know, you have zero history to look back on. And, you know, there's a big trend now of going back to really iconic kits of the early 90s and stuff like that and remixing them. Obviously, we had none of that to go back on. So we sat down with them and said, you know, what would be the key way that you want to express the club? And they were saying that they wanted it to be 100% about the city and the people of the city. So they actually came to us with a brief of looking at Art Deco, different styles like that. So we were able to use, again, because it is 2018, an iconic Adidas graphic that was used by Holland in 88, and do a line version that kind of resembled a bit of an Art Deco feel. So, and then on the away, we did one that is, you know, Los Angeles is kind of like angel's wings done down from across the chest. So, again, both trying to be Art Deco in style, at least a little nod to it. And then, you know, how that translates across the black and gold and white and gold kits.
Okay. And looking back on your time producing kits to date, are there any personal favourites that kind of stand out for you?
I think the MLS All-Star one stands out just because it was, you know, you can have a bit of fun there and you're not bound by regulations. One of my favourite ones, I mean, Bayern in general would always be a highlight for me because of the stature of the club and how you know, they won the Champions League this year. You know, it's great to be associated with a club of that stature. And the mint one that I did for them was actually one of my favourites, just because I knew when I was designing it that it was going to ruffle a few feathers, and so did the club. And, you know, they came to us saying, we don't want a white kit for this season. So, you know, if you're talking about, like we did earlier with the UEFA guidelines of having a dark and a light kit, we knew we had to have a light kit and it couldn't be white. So what other colours can we use? And actually came back with a horizontal direction across all the clubs of that year of using these pastel colours. So we obviously didn't want to do anything in the yellow shade because of Dortmund. You know, not being grey is still kind of white, so we didn't really want to go there. We can't do light blue because of 1860 Munich. So, you know, these, this is kind of where we ended up with a mint green and this kind of desaturated purple.
Okay, very good. And that was the Bayern away kit for the 18-19 season.
Yes, correct,
is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I'm expecting you must have kits nicely framed and hung up on the walls, no, in your place?
Is that right? I wish I did, actually. I don't. I do have a collection of my ones, but at the moment they're just in a drawer. We're just in the moment in the process of looking to buy somewhere, but when we do that, I'm definitely going to get a bit of a man cave and hang up some of my kits that I've done for sure.
Oh, very good. Are you much of a football player yourself? Do you ever play the game?
I used to be, not so much now. I went from basically, you know, playing when I was growing up to not really playing after I had an injury when I was about 14 years old. So
okay.
Then I didn't really play any sport until I played American football at university. So it was, you know, good. Four years of playing no sport until I could properly run again, basically.
well, tell us about Marcus Dilley, the football player and the American football player. Give us a wee description.
I played free safety for the University of Brighton and the London Blitz. We won the American football version of the Europa League in 2011.
Oh, wow.
So I got to play in Valencia and Berlin and stuff like that against some semi-pro players, which was cool.
Hot conditions in Valencia to be wearing all of that kit, no?
It was actually raining. It was like a monsoon that day.
Really? Wow, okay, right.
Yeah, but we spent 30 hours on a bus getting there, played a three-hour game, won it, got on 30-hour bus back, and that was the weekend.
Wowzers. And for the slightly uninitiated, what is a free safety?
So you're basically the last line of defence. So if you ever see it on the TV, they're not normally on screen until someone throws the ball deep, and then they're there to kind of break up the pass, basically. So the thing was, I was always quite fast, so not many people could get behind me, and I had a bit of a reckless abandon, so I used to just sprint into people.
And I know you did take quite a varied path to doing what you're doing now, but for anyone out there who knows that they would like to get into kit design, is there what is perceived to be like a typical academic route or kind of training route?
I think there's normally two avenues traditionally that you can go down. One would be fashion design, and then you can obviously turn that into like active wear and stuff like that. Or you can go down a more traditional graphic design route, and then you can then, you know, learn the different ways that is then put onto fabrics and trims and stuff like that. So they're the two main ones really at a university.
Okay. And kits out there in the current season, are there any other than the Norwich third kit we discussed earlier, are there any kits that you'd like to give a bit of a shout out to? Any kits that for you are doing something very interesting?
Yeah, I think the main one for me is Inter Milan and on their home kit and their away as well, and third are great, but I think particularly the home. You know, we were talking about earlier how you can vary different stripe kits without, you know, completely breaking the tradition of the club. And this zigzag version, I think, is a very good way to do that. It's, you know, unlike anything that they've done in the last, you know, 10, 15 years. Normally, it's either variants of stripe width or putting a graphic inside the stripe, or, you know, different base of colours and stuff like that. You know, when Nike were doing their ones where you weren't allowed to do anything on the sleeves, it was either blue sleeves or black sleeves with a stripe on the front and back. And, you know, that's all you can do. They had the ones with the vault coloured socks, things like that. But this one is actually, you know, a complete change in terms of what the stripe is like. They obviously did the one last year, which around the sponsor box, they did a little bit of a diagonal, but again, mainly stripes traditionally. But yeah, this one, I think it's a great balance between, you know, being progressive while still, you know, having that that traditional kind of look. Because from a distance, and this is a thing that I always say is, you know, does it still look like the club? You know, if you look at Barcelona when they had the checkers and stuff, you could still see that it was Barcelona, mainly because of the colour palette. But this one, even more so, you can tell from, you know, 50 yards away that's Inter Milan playing over there, because it's, you know, essentially blue and black stripes. But if you get up closer, you can see they're actually zigzags and stuff like that. So really good way of you know, hitting between the two there for me.
Absolutely. And one thing I noticed yesterday on the Tottenham kit for this year, I am quite a fan of Tottenham kits, especially in recent years. When the players were walking down the tunnel after the match, I noticed at the back of the collar on the Tottenham kit this year, the back of the collar, it almost works and looks as if it's the front of the collar. It has the kind of two, I'm trying to describe this in a way that makes sense on a podcast. I'd probably just suggest everyone go and have a look at the back of a Tottenham kit. It's kind of the kind of material crosses over as you would typically find on the point of the front of a collar. Do you find more and more that small touches like that really add a great deal to the kind of value aesthetically of kits? And last year's Inter Milan, that is one of my all-time favorite kits. I absolutely love it, even down to the wee print details on the inside of the back collar. And I think that Tottenham kit is a real nice example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Nike have done a great job this year of one, giving designers enough options to be able to create, you know, all these things. So with every big brand, you normally have a set number of collars you can use, different sleeve, whether it be raglan or setin, and, you know, cuff options and stuff like this. And they've even done it with the position of the crest, because if you look at the, I think, the yellow kit that Spurs have, they're both central, and obviously England use that as well on their home kit. So, you know, all these ways of, you know, essentially giving variants, and the actual details of these collars in particular are really interesting, because I haven't personally, especially in sportswear, seen anyone where it kind of, like you said, it's not exactly a mirror image, but, you know, it still does have the overlap. I believe Liverpool use it on their home kit as well, the similar type of collar. So, you know, these and how that collar is treated with, you know, with the Liverpool one, it has the teal tipping on the end of it. You know, these little bits and details are very key to show that you're able to do different things for different clubs and have them not be the same, but essentially at a factory level still adhere to, you know, the set number of collars and set number of sleeve and cuff types, etc.
I do think the Liverpool kit this year is a really nice example of the introduction of a highlight colour, as the teal does, that can really just lift the look and feel of a kit, and then how that runs through to so I don't remember if it's the second or the third kit Liverpool.
Yeah, the away one, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's a great thing personally. I mean, the teal hasn't been used by New Balance really at all. They did that away kit, which kind of went back to the 95-ish time with the kind of quadrants they had.
Yes, yeah.
But, you know, other than that, they didn't really use it on the home. It was always, you know, either a gold colour, like a yellowy gold, or white. So to get the teal back in there again, I think it's really cool. It's what I grew up thinking of Liverpool as, with that colour. So, and then it's always good when you use it as a pop colour on one, and then you're able to go kind of full flood with it on the away. And red's always a tough one, because by UEFA it's a dark colour, but, you know, is it a dark or is it a light? It depends on the shade, obviously. So, you know, the light kit is the teal one for Liverpool, because they've obviously got the black third. So, but it's, you know, when you can play with these colours and, you know, make such impact, especially when it hasn't been used for so long, I think it's great. And that's kind of where I was coming from with the navy for Bayern on the home in 18 as well.
And can I ask you, from a technical perspective, we see so very much less long-sleeved kits these days, or at least players wearing long-sleeved kits. Is there a particular reason for that? Does it come down to the production? And you often see kind of base layer garments being worn underneath kits. You know, my natural thought is, is it a chance to sell more base layer products along with the short sleeve shirts rather than just selling one product, which would be the long sleeved shirt? Is there a particular reason for that?
I think some of it is to be able to have the endorsement of base layer products on field. I think that's, you know, one thing that will come out of it. Yeah. But I think in general, there's very much more a movement now into sustainability. So you might be thinking, how does long sleeve make anything to do with sustainability? But there's kind of two ways of looking at it, really, or maybe even three. One is to use recycled materials when you make it. Two is to make less things. And three is to make things, if you do make them, that last longer. So they're the kind of three main ones. And if you look at number two, where you just make less things, every single version of a kit, whether it be men's fit, women's fit, long sleeve, youth, mini kits, baby kits, they're all different SKUs or different styles to a factory. So you know, all these things, if you're making all of those, you need to be able to make sure that they go to a place where they're going to be sold. So if people aren't buying as many long sleeve ones anymore, you know, even goalkeeper kits now are going to short sleeve. You know, remember back in the day, it used to be Barthez only, and now it's, you know, everyone. So, you know, if they're not going to be sold and they're not going to be, you know, is there a point in making them? I personally really like the look of them, especially when you're using a graphic on there, which then can go over the full sleeve. You know, if you're talking about, again, going back to the Juventus, if you've got stripes on the sleeves and they're the full stripes, then I think it looks great. But again, yeah, you need to be responsible, really, if you're going to be making these things, that they are going to get sold, or if you're going to, you know, the setup costs of making something that's such a small run as well, you know, isn't necessarily the wisest thing to do as a brand sometimes.
Yeah. I don't know if it is available, and if it is, I haven't seen it yet, but I would particularly like to see this year's home Dortmund kit in long sleeves, and how that really disruptive black, almost a kind of ripped, torn effect of the main shirt itself, and how that would transfer over to the sleeve.
So that's an interesting one, actually, because to my knowledge, the Dortmund kit only has the graphic on the front at the moment. So actually really interesting that, you know, in your mind, it's gone to such a disruptive thing, because sometimes, you know, brands are often criticized, especially on the back of shirts, for keeping them blank and stuff. But sometimes you can create that impact by just using the front panel and having something that's really disruptive, like that graphic, like you said. So, I mean, if you look at the Man U third one, the black and white with the with the red logos and stuff, I believe that's on the sleeves. So, you know, having that all over would be, you know, quite a crazy one. I don't know if there's a long sleeve version of it, but if there is, I can imagine that being quite the statement piece, especially if you want to team them up with the shorts that have the graphic on, which I don't think the team will be wearing, but you can buy apparently.
I have looked long and hard to see if that shirt is available in long sleeved. I'm wanting to buy my nephew it for Christmas just for the sake of him having it, but I don't think it is, unfortunately, no. So do you have... do you have any standout kits of all time? Are there any kits that you could kind of look back on and think, you know what, that must have started something in my head that has led me to where you are today?
I think growing up as a United fan, I think it was when Nike took over from Umbro is kind of where I first remember starting to draw kits as a kid and stuff like that, and doing variances of their base styles. So the first two that United used, especially the one, obviously talking about the Ronaldo, the start of the Ronaldo era now, the Total 90 one, which they used in 2004, is kind of my up there for one of my one. I think mainly nostalgia, but I also think, as looking at it now, there's always obviously a big back and forth about templates and how they're utilized. And obviously Nike in 2016 went quite extreme, where everyone essentially had the same base style, and it was just really color variants, especially the top ones when you're using the top level of technology. So having looked back at, you know, templates and how they utilize, I think the Total 90 one was great, because you had, you know, two teams who were going at it in United and Arsenal at the time, both using the same, you know, base style and done in completely different ways. And they're both obviously predominantly red teams, Arsenal used obviously the white sleeves, but then also had the number plate and in the back in white with their yellow tinge on there as well. So
yeah,
you know, it was just cool to see, and especially when they utilize the number with the circle around it on the front of all those international teams as well. So yeah, looking back, I think that's probably the moment where it started to click that I was actually interested in this stuff.
Okay. I always think of the Holland and the Portugal kits of that time always spring to mind with me, especially like the moment you said the numbers in the circle on the front, that instantly made me think of those two international sides. So Marcus, can you just remind people where they can find you and follow you online, please?
Yeah, mdil38 on Twitter. I do have an Instagram, but most of my interactions are on Twitter. That's where I spend most of my time. I also have at Dilly Studio. That's mainly just for announcements. So like the Columbus one was put on there. And then I obviously do a little bit of commentary on that stuff. So,
well, super looking forward to seeing what comes from the Columbus crew.
Absolutely,
in the near future. Super exciting. So Marcus, it's been I'm sorry, it still sounds funny to be talking to someone called Marcus and saying Marcus.
Same,
it's been an absolute pleasure, and you've just allowed me to indulge one of my kind of greatest loves, and it's been super interesting for me. So thank you very much, Marcus.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
Top man, thank you.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.